I hate my mother.
That's not true. Okay. I'm going to place this here. And I think we all just speak from the diaphragm.
Okay.
All right. I'm just getting up to speed here. So, all this time, I still haven't had my second viewing, but I'm sure one is happening.
Sometimes
week,
yeah, tons of screenings.
Is it true?
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
so all week.
They have a bunch.
I'm sure they're. Yeah, they're doing a bunch over the course of the weekend, Monday, Tuesday, I think, too.
There's one at LACMA on Sunday, for sure.
Okay. But Elvis Mitchell.
Yeah.
Yes. Interviewing you guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
So here's the thing that I was that kept staying with me. Obviously, I know that there's a whole strategy for this, but what I was my first viewing with it, I kept, it's like you almost want to reach in and hold Elizabeth Sigson, man. It's tough, but you gotta blurt it out. Say anything. Take a chance. I don't know anything about intimidation, mind control. The cult effect, I read a little bit about it. You guys know much, much more, have looked into it much more than I, but I wanted her to do something. That was the one issue I had with the character.
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing is that, we're talking about the first 2 weeks after a severe, extended period of trauma and abuse.
It was longer than 2 weeks.
No, no. Her period coming out of the, at the lake house.
Yeah.
Oh, you thought you felt like it was longer.
I thought that her time with her sister,
yeah,
and her husband was longer than 2 weeks.
Oh, I always thought of it like 2 to 3 weeks or something. But okay. Yeah, but a short period of time,
right,
versus what she had been through, and just in spending time with people, both with cults and just people in abusive relationships. It would be absolutely untrue, I would think, to have that character be able to articulate what happened to them or even admit what happened, because a lot of it is about the shame that they were in that situation and the fear from it, and it's so complex that people don't want to admit it to themselves, and never mind say anything out loud to somebody else. So it's a combination of those things, and I just felt like that's being true to the person and the character.
And yet she did mimic her mouth, her identity as a teacher and a, what was the line?
Teacher and a leader.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also how from, from all Sean's research, it was clear that when you get out of something like this, and also the fact that she got out, that she ran away, which is such a dangerous step to take, is a very courageous thing for her to do. And so the film starts off with her taking this action of getting out, and it's the first step of her sort of trying to reassimilate and get better. But also for her coming out of a group like that, it's so hard for her to say what exactly was going on. You know what I mean? Like that, she can't. She gets out of there, and she doesn't necessarily know.
Doesn't understand.
Yeah, what was wrong? What was right? How to define exactly what it was that she was part of for so long?
Yeah.
And I mean, from the experience, from the member, the conversation with one person that we know who got out of a group like this, it took her a long time to sort of really understand what had happened to her, and to really start dealing with it. So the period of time that the film deals with Martha after getting out is a period of time of just the beginning of the process, exactly.
I think it can be equated, tell me if this is wrong to say, but I think it can be equated to something even as simple as like going through a breakup.
Uh-huh.
Like you're intensely in love with somebody, you lose that relationship, and you wake up thinking about that person, you go to sleep thinking about that person, you think about them all day, and then as time goes on, you start to think about them less and less. I mean, it's totally different things, but it's the same mind frame of just like completely being, completely being like, totally, full of just like, does that make sense? Like the I don't know. It's just, and also being close with the person that, you know, was nice enough to share some experiences with us. I've known her for 8 years, and she, I didn't know about this, her experience, until 2 or 3 years into our friendship. Mm. And then you start to notice, after knowing, like, you notice her behavior stuff, and then as time goes on, she's doing really well now, you know, like really, really well, and she's a great person, and but she still has these bouts of...
She's still living with it.
I mean, and I think that's with any kind
of... How long was she involved in that?
I'm not sure the amount of time, but...
It was about a year.
Is there a pattern to people that bolt and escape? Do they usually do it within a year, I'm sure you researched the hell out of this.
Yeah, I never got into statistics or anything. I'm just talking to people. Someone told me that they thought they were there for 6 months, and if they had been there for any longer, don't know if they ever would have turned around. And the other thing was that, like, about describing the exit, was very much like a momentary flash of that something was wrong, but not being able to comprehend it. So when she finally got out and got away and was separated, then there was so much about, did I make the wrong choice? Because, you know, like you mentioned, the teacher and a leader thing. So she comes into this group as this person, and the group tells her that this old life was wrong. So they strip her down to this new person, they make her think all these new things, but then she has this flash where she thinks, you know, this is wrong and she needs to get away. So then she goes back to this other world, but just because she knew that was wrong, it doesn't mean that she necessarily knows that everything was wrong. So then she's stuck between these two personalities where both worlds are wrong in her mind, and she can't make sense of it. So the teacher and the leader thing to me was very much like this, you know, it's now in her. It's part of the brainwashing. It's like, it's her defense mechanism. It's what she reaches back to when her back's against the wall. I thought of Martha very much like a sick dog. Like, I remember being a kid and my dog got sick and, like, you know, tried to bite me, and I always thought of Martha in that way.
I could certainly understand the psychology or the psychological tactic of implanting a very favorable, positive image of you being a person of great, of considerable value, mm-hmm. And they find they are alone that will discover that.
Yeah,
obviously. But that is accompanied. Again, we're talking about a film that I saw 9 months ago, mm-hmm. but that it is accompanied by some obviously non-consensual,
yes.
sexual assault.
Yeah, yes. But that's
so
the part.
Where is the positive reinforcement in that? I mean, why would the leader? Why would Fox be doing that?
But there's not.
I mean, there's not positive reinforcement in it. But what it is the. I mean, that to me is the worst stuff in the movie, more than the violence. Because what the scariest thing about that is that that's happening, but then there's all these people that you've grown to trust around her, and they're telling her it's okay, and that's how these groups work and manipulate, is that you're a young woman, and there's these six other young women that you have become sisters with in a short period of time and developed an intense relationship, so you start to trust them. So if something bad happens to you, you know it's bad, but then there's all these people who you now trust telling you it's not. So your compass of what is normal changes, and then that's how this whole process begins.
Now, I'm not, like I said, I'm one of the people who's, like, not smart enough. My fault, not your fault, my fault. I was not smart enough to detect what was actually occurring at the end. I was convinced that they were coming back. They were back. They were going to get her. They were going to grab her up. And I didn't see that happen, but I was convinced it happened anyway. So this is very intimidating, mm-hmm. Ending, mm-hmm. which I love. I'm not in any way saying I didn't like it, mm-hmm. but I was told, oh, no, she just drove away with her sister. Mm-hmm. So you meant for me, guys like me, not weren't smart enough to figure it out, to feel this, but at the same time, perhaps if you read it the way it was actually, you know, to see that, I didn't quite get, you know, you're looking for that middle ground.
I think that's, right? Sean talked to it, but I think that's a really good, reaction.
Yeah, I mean, that's the film is Martha's journey. So, if, And I'm a big believer. Like we made very specific choices about what made it into the film. Every little piece of information, who's who.
But the guy in the white T-shirt, is she seeing him or not?
I mean, well, she's there. He's there.
Yeah, I never wanted to play with like her imagining if things were like manifesting. That was never. I don't think that's
one of the most chilling images I've seen in the whole year of film. I love it when things are underplayed and yet they manifest in you.
He's there, but the question is, who is he? And so it's like, so you have that feeling like you're convinced that's happening, like that's totally good, but then it cuts off, then that makes you think something else. So like that puts you in the two worlds that sort of Martha's in, where she's unsure. So I think that's a great way, and definitely like an intended way to read the ending. So
I think you do, you respect your audience.
Yeah.
We all respect the audience to make their own decisions and not spoon feed them anything. I think it's more about the experience, and I think he did it with such grace.
We all love endings that leave you with a question mark. I mean, it's much more interesting, I think, to end a film where things are still up in the air. But as an audience, you're sort of like, where a film is actually an experience. Yeah. And so there's a very clear story of Martha, and there's a very clear, Martha is the central character, and we're following these people, and it's grounded in reality, but it's an experience. It's being in her head, and at the end of the film, the way it ends is we're totally still in her head, and the question is not whether the question is not whether she gets attacked or something awful happens or nothing happens. It's that feeling will be with her for the rest of her life.
That's something you absolutely
have.
Yeah.
I think in the movie, like the movie is. I mean, I always feel like when you go to the movie. When you go to a movie and you pay the money, it should be not just 2 hours. It should be something that you think about and something that you can talk about. And I mean, the films that I was introduced to, a lot of films that they introduced me to, we still talk about 8 years after seeing them. Always.
I gotta say, when I ran that photo of you at the party, some guys were commenting, the ultimate hipster Sundance.
I saw
Wait, which photo was
this? Somebody said in it that you were wearing glasses, and somebody, I told you guys this, and it said those glasses are probably not even prescription.
Yeah.
And I was like, you're the one who's been wearing the longest. My vision's starting to go, and so is Sean's. So that's funny.
Yeah, but
we get clear glasses.
It's funny because I've met people who do that.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Whatever.
It's not the reality, but. At least I keep talking about it.
I am such a champion of Moneyball and Friday Night Lights because neither of the men with the expected, hungered for, triumphant, glorious win.
Yeah.
I hate watching movies with the glorious, but I can't stand it. Which is why it's so soothing and so. So it's unusual to see a film that doesn't just hit it on the head.
Yeah.
Say everything's fine. That's very cool.
Thanks.
But I was going, wait a minute, but I was, but that's good because it stays with me.
I mean, so it's like, at the end of the day, you go see most movies and they leave the theater and they're done and you don't think about them again. Mm-hmm. And then you think, well, I could have had that experience sitting in my room and doing something else or doing 10 other things while this thing was playing, and then caught that moment that I wanted to see where everything works out and then gone back to my day. But if the fact is like, if you're going to movie theater, you want to have something special, something that doesn't necessarily just tell a story, but takes you on a journey and really brings you into a world that you wouldn't be able to experience unless you actually went there and actually took part in this. And that's what Sean does so well in the film, is it really creates a universe, and then it creates a universe, and the reason why that universe feels so real is then because it's juxtaposed with something that's grounded in something that is more relatable to everyone, which is just sort of the day-to-day family life. And that's what's exciting about the film, is that, you know, it's scary, but also the first part of the call, you're like, wow, this is kind of a cool group. Like, these, you know, they sit around, they play music, there's, you know, girls and guys, and everything is free and lovely and dubby and all that stuff. What? No, but then all of a sudden there's something, the bit by bit you start seeing what's really going on here.
Yeah.
And you really feel like, you know, when you watch that film, you really feel like you're seeing everything through Martha's eyes, and when Martha's having fun, you're having fun with her, and then when she starts feeling uncomfortable, you start feeling comfortable with her.
I guess the thing that our goal, for me at least, I think it's for all three of us, is to entertain while challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. that I think is, like, you know, is the most important thing, is to be challenged, but also to escape in something.
As opposed to
like going to a movie that you know is going to be challenging, but and you're like forcing yourself to sit through it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's why I love David Fincher so much, because I think that's what he does consistently.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
So, yeah, in your research, is it typical or normal for when a group, a cult of this sort, loses somebody, if somebody is, do they routinely try and find them and get them back? Is that normal behavior for a smallish, isolated?
I've heard of it happening,
mm-hmm.
you know? I mean, it's definitely. I mean, there's definitely cases of it. I don't know if it's common, but I felt like it was true to the nature of this group and what they were experiencing, that their stakes were high enough that they would want to do that. Or at least enough that she would believe they would want to, which is really what is the important thing.
I was also, you know, really taken that I admired the brass of coming up with the title of four names starting with M, that you must know that people out there are saying Martha something.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
Yeah.
But there again, I don't think anybody's going to forget. They all know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean they don't have to recite each name in the correct order.
Yeah, exactly. Again, but I think again that's like, it's entertaining to discuss the title, but it also is challenging to remember.
Yeah, I always felt like I named the film really early when in writing, because mm-hmm. I felt like the three, you know, represented the three personas and struggle of what she's going through, and we knew it was going to be hard, and it wasn't like, oh, let's come up with some like crazy title to like make it difficult for people. It was really like that became the name of the movie, and I didn't really know how difficult it was, because I was just writing alone and talking to these guys. And then when we started getting out there, people would obviously comment on it, and then we became aware. And then I said to anybody working with us, you know, anyone who ever brought it up, it's like, well, let's talk about it. We were totally open, but no one ever could come up with anything else, because once they see the movie or read the script, it was like, well, this is just the name of this movie.
Well, also, but the title of the movie always added to the story for me. I mean, it always, like, mm-hmm. it was another game. Like, in the beginning, I was like, why is it called this? And then I read the script, and
right.
like, oh, and put it together, and then reaffirmed all these things I was thinking about,
right.
like the names, and that's, you know,
I
was still learning.
No, I know.
I got to Sundance.
Yeah. but the first reviews at Sundance it was great to read. That I think there was two big reviews, and within the first, you know, couple of paragraphs, they talked about how now, after seeing the movie, they remembered it, and mm-hmm. that was really rewarding to know that there was a positive reaction to that right away.
So, what's your next Fox Searchlight movie or Sundance?
We're all three writing right now, and we're editing Antonio's movie that we shot in Paris right after we shot Martha. So hopefully people will see that soon, and hopefully we'll be making.
So you might have something in 2013, you're saying? Not next year.
We're in post with Antonio's second feature.
Yeah.
We have something coming. Yeah. We have something coming out in 2012.
Yeah.
And then
we'll be seeing where. What
where we don't
know.
Yeah. Yeah. We're still editing and trying to figure out. You know.
Maybe the fall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
And then.
Do you have a title?
That one's Simon Killer.
Okay.
That's in there.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And we're all writing as well. We're all developing our next projects.
Do you have an office?
We just got
November 1st.
November 1st.
In New York.
In Williamsburg, yeah.
Right near our house.
We've been working from home for a long time.
Yeah.
And your what conventions are you defying in your office? Do you have no desk?
Yeah, we sit on the floor.
We sit cross-legged on the floor.
We sit on the floor.
Tablets.
There are no computers. It's only pen and paper.
Yeah,
we have a writing room and an initiation room.
Mm-hmm. All candlelight, no electricity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ping pong
table.
Yeah, ping pong table. No, I mean,
that would take up the entire office.
No.
So my friends just got a really nice one.
Yeah.
You know, ping pong tables, they often buckle.
Yeah.
There's all these flaws. They bought one that's, you can actually pay if you want to, $700-$800 for a ping pong table.
Really?
But it's perfect. Yeah. It never buckles.
I think the coolest thing to have in an office would be a pool table. I think pool table would be pretty sweet to have in an office.
Yeah, it'd be great, but I don't. That office, our office would be a pool table.
That would be our editing room. Would be the pool room.
No, it couldn't even fit in there.
No, that could. No, get them in there. Small.
No, it's exciting because we don't. We've never actually.
My neighbor carried
one
from
the same place. You know, like working. It's always been.
We're hoping that it adds to the productivity.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean the whole goal is, you know. It is that we have the space that we can come to every day, and I mean we do it anyway. We go to each other's house, or we go and meet at a cafe or a bar, or whatever, and go over the things we need to go over, or go over scripts, or go over things, and you know, or do the work we need to do. But to have a space that's solely dedicated to that, where we can really go, and it's a peaceful space, and we'll be able to bounce ideas
and big pong balls.
Big pong balls. That didn't sound good.
What train line did you get? L train.
Yeah.
It's beyond Montrose?
No,
it's before
it's right the first stop. It's the Bedford stop.
Bedford, yeah.
It's first stop. And we live off of Warren. He lives off of Bedford.
Yeah, we were lucky to find it, actually, because it's not. You would think there'd be more office space in Williamsburg, but there's not at all.
I was so infuriated by the train when I was back there for the New York Film Festival.
Because the service is terrible right now?
The E was down for the weekends.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You couldn't watch the Kennedy. You had to go the other way. Mm-hmm. I was going on the east side, 456, and you know, there are two of them go through to Brooklyn, and one doesn't, or the fourth one doesn't change over, and then for some reason that wasn't really working. Mm-hmm.
It's horrible right now.
This is horrible.
It started a few years ago. The service just drastically dropped with the financial crisis.
Yeah,
exactly. But you feel it every single day.
The L train is just, L train is literally the worst. The L and the G are the worst.
The L's the worst.
It
can be. It can be great too, but also at the same time, they put a lot into the Second Avenue line. So a lot of the resources are all there.
Such a bad idea.
Well, that's definitely being built.
They've already finished. They've already finished.
The whole destroyed.
Oh. Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's some great. There's actually some really fantastic photos of the underground.
Is it made? What did they finish? The uptown part.
The uptown part. They haven't. You can't tell. Obviously, accessible. You can see they built all the tunnels and the tunnels were there, but they've already laid all the tracks and they're halfway. They're halfway done. They've done a lot of progress. But at the same time, it's useless.
It's a dumb line.
But
it is and it isn't. I mean, it isn't a dumb line.
Where it goes from?
No, I know. It's 4796, but the idea of the Second Avenue train, it's funny because I think it's more to do with this thing that's just been in New York. Like, it's forever that they've been talking about a Second Avenue train. It's like almost like they're just doing it because they feel like they have to do it at this point. The reason why I think the L train is the worst train is because if there is no L train, you're really kind of landlocked.
Oh, yeah. JMZ.
The JMZ, but you have to walk to the JMZ.
So what?
If the four or the five isn't running, you can figure yourself out.
I agree with you.
Borderline Films hates the MTA.
I love taking the 109, and I love the subway.
I was in the Lorimer stop. Grand Avenue, and it was one of the greatest moments in the L train. It comes really late, so not only is it late for you, but it's also packed.
When
you get on.
It's always busy.
In the old days, it was really hot, and before back in the 70s, late 70s, I used to hop between the trains.
Mm-hmm.
And just
hard to get the breeze.
And because there was actually no AC. That's all that. It was awful.
It was awful.
But anyway, one guy threw a soft drink at the train.
You're in between the cars?
No, this we well, out of anger.
I just thought, you know, he was expressing the, you know, communal rage everywhere.
I'm always amazed by the fact that there are more accidents on the L train, especially when they like they stop one line or they, you know, when they're doing that thing where they only have one train running, and you go to 14th Street and Union Square, and there was a time there was no room to stand. Everybody was literally up until to the edge, and the fact that more accidents don't happen is amazing to me, because it's just like people are waiting there for 40 minutes, an hour sometimes, and people are getting pissed, and it's that New York City kind of like, especially during the summer.
I'd like to get an interesting photo of you guys before I get kicked out of here. So,
sure.
Should
we pretend we're on the subway train?
I'm gonna do one around the table. Okay. If we could, sitting. Okay. And then we'll try light from the window.
Okay.
Just one.
How do we look more hipsterish?
We want to put on our clear glasses.
Let me sit here, and you get and one of you can be larger or something. That this light.
Do we stand or sit or?
No, if you sit that, you can, you know. I'll make it work.
All right, cool.
All right, I think this gentleman said the black is off. Yes, it is. I was at the Kirk Douglas thing last time.
What's
that?
Santa Barbara.
How was that?
I meant to say Michael Douglas tribute.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And, yeah. 1, 2, 3. The video and everything. And he's, time to go. Okay.
No, it's cool. You have time.
Can we do one more standing on the with the natural light coming in?
I just watched Black Rain again. It's one of my favorite.
I mean, the side of your face, like tutorials for our shot.
I love Michael Douglas. Actually, every time I went to make a film, I went to his movies with us.
This is good. Okay. Here we go. 1, 2, 3. And one more for safety. Okay, here we go.
Thank you so much.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Honor meeting you.
Good
to see you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks,
Jeffrey. So the Lockman thing, everybody's going to be there, Elizabeth, everybody?
I think
I'm going to try and get myself into this.
I think it's these guys,